World This Week. I'm Steve Young, CBS News, sitting in for Alan Jackson on the CBS Radio Network. An evacuation from Cambodia was completed this week, and reporters ending a self-imposed embargo told a strange tale of what happened after the Khmer Rouge came to power. South Vietnamese refugees continued their journey toward the continental United States as the parents of two of the last Americans to die in South Vietnam were told their sons' bodies were back in Saigon. A U.S. senator went to Cuba, Egypt moved to clear the Suez Canal, and there was an anniversary, 30 years since the German surrender ending World War II in Europe. After several hundred foreigners who had been confined to the former French embassy made it by truck convoy to the Thai border, newsmen felt free to report what they had seen in Cambodia. New York Times reporter Sidney Shanberg said virtually the entire population of Phnom Penh had been forced to clear out of the city. The Khmer Rouge commanders appear to be enforcing a mass migration to rural areas in something resembling a peasant revolution. Shanberg said no one was exempt from the order to evacuate, not even critically ill hospital patients.
From our point of view, perhaps that looked inhumane and cruel. And I can tell you how I felt when I saw those people going up the road. I was horrified, and I thought, what terrible people they are to do a thing like this, because these people are certainly going to die. But from the Khmer Rouge point of view, one might guess that these people had to be expendable, because they weren't equipped to care for them. They didn't have the doctors or the nurses. And to leave them there in the hospital would be to admit failure. So you clear them out, and if they die, then you blame it on the previous administration.
There were some suggestions that Phnom Penh and other Cambodian cities were out of food and that the population was being ordered to the countryside to plant crops necessary for survival. The stream of South Vietnamese refugees heading for the continental U.S. continued, with intermediate stops in the Philippines and Guam. The American freighter Challenger arrived on Guam with 5,000 refugees. Its captain, Arthur Boucher, spoke of wild confusion and heartbreak as people in small boats headed for his ship.
Crafts, boats, all kinds of Navy crafts. Some were burning, just cast adrift, and people scrambling about trying to get on board. It was impossible. We heaved anchor and steamed out of the area.
Thousands, said Boucher, were left behind in South Vietnam. Also left behind in Saigon because of confusion during the final evacuation of Americans, the bodies of two Marines, Corporal Charles McMahon, Jr. of Woburn, Massachusetts, and Lance Corporal Darwin Judge of Marshalltown, Iowa. Charles McMahon, Sr. spoke with newsmen after the Pentagon said it was mistaken when it told him earlier in the week the body was on the way home.
It seems to me that waiting 8 days and having them every day tell me that he'll be coming, and then last night, all of a sudden, 8 days later, tell me they never got him out. It would appear to me that they must have known this a week ago. If they had nerve enough to tell me they killed my boy, why didn't they have nerve enough to tell me they didn't get him out?
At last report, the Defense Department believed the bodies of the two Marines were at a Saigon hospital and was trying to arrange for their return to this country. Australia's Prime Minister Gough Whitlam was in Washington this week. After meeting with President Ford, Whitlam assessed the meaning of Saigon's surrender to the communists.
The truth is that the United States didn't lose Vietnam any more than she lost China. Vietnam was not America's to lose. What was defeated was not the United States and her allies, but a policy of foreign intervention which was bound to fail. There was no time in the past 30 years when such a policy could have succeeded.
First Cambodia, then South Vietnam, and now it appears Laos. Laotian Prime Minister Souvanaphouma has all but conceded a communist victory in his country, a takeover managed without the fierce fighting which marked the conquest of the rest of Indochina. Relations with Cuba are being reassessed by the Organization of American States. As the OAS met in Washington, the U.S. maintained a neutral stand. Cuban refugees rallied nearby, saying the economic embargo should be maintained. But there were indications the OAS might drop sanctions against Cuba, perhaps as soon as this summer. South Dakota Senator George McGovern met Cuban leader Fidel Castro this week in Havana. McGovern got the impression that one thing is uppermost in Castro's mind when he considers normalization of relations with the U.S. and other OAS member nations.
This clear that the dominant issue is the embargo. He sees that as a unilaterally imposed action by the United States. He says that other issues outstanding are going to be very difficult even to discuss meaningfully until the embargo is lifted. He stressed that the United States imposed it. They have to be the body that removes it. He expects that this is going to be done sooner or later.
In the Middle East this week, Egypt began to clear the Suez Canal of ships which have blocked the waterway ever since the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. It's expected to take about a month to tow them all through, with the canal scheduled to be reopened on June 5th. At the age of 83, Joseph Cardinal Menzenti, Roman Catholic primate of Hungary and a symbol of anti-communism, died this week in exile in Vienna. Cardinal Menzenti was remembered by a New Jersey priest, Father Julian Fuser, whose church the cardinal had visited in 1973.
Cardinal Menzenti was rejected by everybody, and that was the meaning of his martyrdom. Even the Holy Father, who personally loved him, more or less rejected Cardinal Menzenti. And when it happened that the cardinal was completely alone, it was the little Hungarians, especially these refugees, the refugees of 1956, the DPs of 1945. These were the Hungarians who took the cardinal to their hearts, and they considered him as their chief shepherd.
Father Joseph Fuser, who saw the late Cardinal Menzenti in 1973. CBS News correspondent Charles Collingwood was among the newsmen in Reims, France, to witness the signing of the German surrender, ending the war in Europe three decades ago.
General Jodl, chief of staff of the German army, signed the last document. He sat there very straight, with his head bent over the papers, and when he had signed...
Collingwood, 30 years later, looked this week at the past and the present.
By coincidence, VE Day, the 30th anniversary of the German surrender in World War II, came round within a week of the fall of Saigon. They were the two most emotion-filled wars of our time. Both ended in unconditional surrender. Both had enormous impact on American attitudes. But there the similarity ends. It's not only that America was on the winning side in one and on the losing side in the other, but that the nation was convinced that we were on the right side in World War II all the way, and became less and less sure about Vietnam until at the end most people came to doubt whether we should have been there in the first place. This had profound consequences for the American mood as we emerged from these two very different wars. We came out of World War II full of pride and self-confidence, out of Vietnam full of doubt and even self-reproach. 30 years ago, America gladly assumed the mantle of active leadership of the West. Today, we are finding that role increasingly irksome and are uncertain of our ability to fulfill it. The end of World War II ushered in an era of close cooperation between the President and the Congress on foreign policy. The end of Vietnam has put the White House and Capitol Hill at loggerheads. As a people, Americans are given to extreme reactions. It may be that the national optimism which succeeded World War II caused us to overreach ourselves. It may equally be true that the pessimism following the Vietnam War may result in underreaching. The best outcome of these diverse experiences would be a kind of balance between the two. That, one assumes, is what the current reassessment of America's post-Vietnam foreign policy is all about. Charles Collingwood, CBS News.
And that's The World This Week, produced by Harry Polosian. I'm Steve Young, CBS News.